Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is July 24th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening for our second quarter wrap-up on the Solari Report. Every year, we have a poster to announce our theme for the year. This year, it was breakaway, and that's because with the financial coup d'etat over, money and politics are shifting. These are big shifts, and all sorts of breakaways happen naturally as a result. Things come apart, things come together, all in new ways. Our conversation throughout the first half of this year is, how do we break away? What's remarkable is when I have lunch with subscribers or meet with them, talk with them, it comes up quite naturally. What do we do? How do we break away? Our theme tonight is a major overhauling of institutions. It's inspired by a quote that was reported in a book on Dylan Reed, the Wall Street firm where I had the opportunity to work and serve as a partner and member of the board of directors. It's a story of Clarence Dillon and Paul Nitze in 1929, and let me read it to you. Driving through New Jersey, Nitze asked Dillon if he thought the market decline an omen of hard times. Remember, this is 1929. Dillon thought for a few minutes and replied, "I think it presages the end of an era." By this, Dillon meant that what lay ahead was not merely a period of retrenchment after which affairs would be conducted as before. Rather, the world was in for a major overhauling of institutions. And where we sit right now is very much like 1929, not in the sense that we should expect a Great Depression, but that institutions are starting to break down, break apart, shift alliances, and lots of planning for changes in institutions is going forward and being affected. But things happen in very organic ways, despite the best laid plans. So a major overhauling of institutions has begun, in part as a result of a slower U.S. and global economy than was expected. Things are coming apart faster and coming together faster than I expected. So change is accelerating, but it's even faster than we talked about in the annual wrap-up in January in the first quarter wrap-up. If you haven't listened to those, I really encourage you to go access those materials. I'm gonna quote and refer to them tonight. I will put up by tomorrow a whole series of related charts and graphs and links to the prior wrap-ups. And I hope and recommend you use them as you listen, particularly in the section on financial markets. I was reading last weekend a wonderful investment book, and one of the studies or series of studies that the author described was analyses that showed the more knowledge and information you had, the lower the quality of decisions, stressing the importance of really focusing on a couple of key and important issues. So I've spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks really stewing about what I want to talk about on the second quarter report, particularly as I drove back from California. You get these long drives, and it gives you a chance to think about what is really important. I was struck in my conversations with subscribers, both at our lunch in Marin and at the Secret Space Conference in San Mateo, how important it was for me to really emphasize and repeat what I believe are the most important themes so that we make sure we have a clear understanding of them. And it's also a deeper, more emotional understanding. So I've thought a lot about what I can say that will really bring that down for you and help and get you grounded in what you need to do in your life going forward. I want to organize my comments around seven areas. So I'm going to do them point by point. So let me just begin. Area number one, the slow burn phrase as the Fed tapers. We see the new Fed chairman, Janet Yellen, announce that the taper will finish in October. That means that enormous monthly infusions are going to come to an end. this is a very dangerous moment for the people who manage the economy. We're already seeing anticipation of liquidity crunches. I've noted in the Salier report and on the blog, the SEC promulgating the new money market rules is very important. This means and anticipates a shift to quality. We already see high-yield bonds, which had really done remarkably well even into the first half of the year, now turning negative for the year. So anticipate a shift to quality. You want to make sure, we'll talk about it later, when it comes to banks, money markets, that you make sure you maintain the best of quality in service providers and custodians. Part of the challenge is that the breakaway civilization has won. The coup was successful. And that means the breakaway civilization, as well as transnational organized crime, has won. We're essentially seeing a situation where the more extreme folks have more assets and power than ever. The more moderate people are now managing more liabilities and less power. That also means that the U.S. government, as the provider of global enforcement, is having more and more trouble enforcing, and their behavior is getting uglier and uglier, and of course, keeping the dollar system working to pay for the entire global enforcement is getting harder and harder to do to keep everybody in the fray. So the signs of the seriousness of the fraying are rising, and that means that there's more and more win-lose kind of competition. Somebody's a winner, somebody's a loser, economic warfare, and it can make things worse. In other words, as players compete in dangerous ways, the entire global economy can shrink as a result of that. And the question for all of us is, how do we evolve into a win-win model? Much bigger conversation. We're seeing tremendous amounts of what I would call asymmetrical warfare. So let me just talk about four examples of this fraying, the first being asymmetrical warfare. I put up on the blog this week a video by a former Border Patrol intelligence officer, Zach Taylor, which is very interesting. I checked it out for a variety of reasons. I think that it's somebody reputable who knows what they're talking about, and I encourage you to watch it. He's talking about the extraordinary influx of illegal immigrants on the nation's southern border. We know since October, reports in the major media, 57,000 young people from Central America mostly have crossed into the U.S. illegally, and almost all of those have stayed. Fewer than 2,000 have been sent back as a result of what the administration policies are. And Taylor is reminding us and warning us about all the various risks associated with what's going on. The question, of course, is what is going on? And my guess number one is you have the cartels sending across people who work for them. Don't be surprised if this could result in an explosion of the cartels moving northwards. I also think that bringing young people in is a way of shoring up the Social Security system. So as more and more people retire, one of the things the government is looking for is, how do we get young, hardworking people appreciative of the opportunity to shore up that system? This is one way. Another is, we know there's tremendous interest in merging North America, Canada, Mexico, U.S. into one sort of European Union. It's another way of sort of bringing us into a merging of NAFTA. But there's some deeply disturbing questions about what is going on, and I would recommend you watch it. One of the things the Taylor points out is that the most powerful force in the Mexican drug business is the Russian mafia. The Russian mafia was partnered with the U.S. On the rape of Russia. One of the best books I ever read on the Russian mafia was, it's called Red Mafia, points out that 99% of the Russian mafia at that point in the late 90s was Jewish. So they are an extremely interesting operation and extremely interesting what financial institutions and activities they've been associated with. It's very important to remember, as we watch what's going on in the world, we're watching something called asymmetrical warfare. We now have players, whether it's transnational organized crime or the breakaway civilization, and they crisscross and ally in various ways, who are more powerful than sovereign governments. So it's very important to remember, as you watch these situations, you're dealing with more parties than just the cartels and the Mexico and the United States. There are other third parties involved, and they are very dangerous and have an agenda. And it's very interesting to ask the question, because many of these immigrants are coming across on federal lands, and they're coming into areas that are very significant operation or have very significant operations for the black budget and the breakaway civilization. So asymmetrical warfare, one example of the extraordinary fraying that's going on of the slow burn. The Ukraine, is Europe in the empire or not? We see the tensions in the Ukraine escalating dramatically with the downing of the Malaysian airline, still unknown exactly what happened. We see today the prime minister and cabinet resign. They're staying in till the election. But that indicates lots of tensions between the Ukraine and the U.S. More rounds of government sanctions, both U.S. and Europe, threatened. There's a very deep oil and gas story here. One of the questions I keep asking is, who's helping Putin? Because it looks to me like he's getting help from North America. One of my questions, since the breakaways are so deeply came out of the U.S. oil and gas story or business area, is to what extent, you know, they're getting help from the breakaways. There is lots of, even though the U.S. is beating up on all sorts of European companies to try and enforce sanctions, what we see is U.S.-based oil and gas companies continuing to do business in Russia or partnered with Russia in the Arctic Circle. So really big questions of who's zooming whom. Note there have been several other air crashes and disappearances since then, and you almost wonder if somebody wants the air space is cleared and is putting tremendous pressure on the general population not to fly. Okay, so Ukraine area of tension, but really a symptom for the squabble between Europe and the dance of Russia and China vis-a-vis the empire. Drought in the southwestern United States and California, very serious. We continue to see more and more pressure on those areas. And don't underestimate the impact that drought could have on the economy, because remember, it's the earth just burping forth the harvest every year that is such a blessing. And you see areas in the Southwest where if the drought continues, they literally cannot support their population. So we're going to start to see water refugees if this keeps up for another year or two. Finally, Gaza, as I've discussed in last week's O'Leary report, we see what I suspect is Europe giving the Israel the sort of will stay away or hands off as they go into the Gaza. And that's because I think Israel wants to exploit the offshore gas deposits and oil and gas deposits, and they need to control the Gaza to do that. Or it's certainly an opportunity to trading that gas to Europe in exchange for having a free hand in the Gaza. We see folks demonstrating in Europe against it. It's unbelievably important, I think, that they connect the dots to the energy independence questions, because on one hand, you'll see consumers pressing for lower gas prices. At the same time, they're criticizing politicians for letting genocide continue in the Gaza. And we need to see the double binds in the different issues along our balance sheet and income statement. So number one, the slow burn is fraying as the Fed tapers. And we need to keep an eye on that slow burn very carefully, because if it really frays badly, we're going to have war. Not to say we don't have war now, but we're going to have something much more serious. More on that later. Okay, area number two, point number two, sharing our neighborhood with a breakaway civilization. I had a wonderful breakthrough after the San Mateo conference. I was driving over to coast with a very dear friend on the highways in Los Angeles, and for the first time I could really physically see the breakaway civilization within a place and how physically and financially they related to the black budget and intelligence community, so the covert side of life, which is slightly different line, and then of course the overt side. So I could see the three worlds, the three parallel universes, the three financial systems sort of integrated within a neighborhood all in one place. And of course, part of that is happening because more and more we're going to start to see the visible signs of them, not just of the growing investment in certain kinds of manufacturing or spaceports or for space activities. But I think as we go into this next phase, they're going to feel a little bit more emboldened to influence what's going on. Two of the things that really struck me at San Mateo was the Richard Dolan's description, and you can see it on the stream, of using night vision to really see the extraordinary number of unusual spaceships flying around in our airspace. And I've gotten myself some night vision goggles, so I'm going to start checking that out, but it wouldn't surprise me. The other thing is, if you want, one of the interesting things that emerged from the conference is many of the researchers I most respect made it clear to me that they think a very important part of the financial drain has not gone into space travel and weaponry, but gone into the extraordinary investment in underground infrastructure, underground bases, tunnels, transportation systems, which clearly have been significant, but it's very hard to get a reliable beat on them. But what struck me was how important they thought it was as a financial matter to build and operate all those underground facilities. So when you're driving around, if you look at what's going on and you contemplate what's going on in the skies above and what's going on underground in the bases and transportation systems below, I think it's a lot easier to see what has until now seemed a little bit like an invisible parallel universe, and see how it really is integrated into our place. One of the interesting things to think about, my impression of the breakaways is that one of the inspirations for them was not just sort of getting control of the flow of black budget money and technology, but part of it was an inspiration to break away from European money and control and the factions in the United States that are more loyal to the European financial interests. So it's very interesting to contemplate what the relationships are between the breakaways and what's the sort of political football going on in Europe. And it's a murky picture, but it's one I hope to explore a little bit more the next time I'm talking with Farallon Dolan. Elections are going to be important this year because the ability of the Congress to balance between the different invisible universes, so to balance between the financial demands or operations of the covert side of the House and the breakaways versus the regular population has really reached an untenable place, and yet Congress has to do what will get them election. What will get them elected. And so we see tremendous tension coming into these elections. As I said, in 2016, I think the private side really wants a corporate kind of handler like Jeb Bush, but it remains to be seen what is going to happen. I do think we see a government that is, in fact, has many, many factions and is in a much more insecure position than they were 3 or 5 years ago. So one of the things to remember is there is no such thing as the government. There are many different agencies, many different factions, and the pressures on them at this point are enormous. It's not a pretty position to be sitting in. Okay, topic number three, rebalancing with China in the emerging markets. One of the Solari reports, if you can only listen to a few from the last quarter, you really must listen to the interview that I did with Steve Roach on his wonderful book, Unbalanced. I strongly recommend that to you. It's the best economics business book I've read so far in 2014. The if you look at the history of our relationship with China, we have really engineered a false prosperity in the U.S. where we spent far beyond what we could afford, financed with debt, and a burst of productivity in China. We see, let's just look at some of the statistics. In 2013, the global GDP was about 74, 75 trillion. The U.S. was 16.8 trillion of that amount. China was 9.24 trillion. That's up from 1 to 2 trillion only a decade ago. So explosive growth to get there. Tremendous productivity. And let's just look at what the numbers are. In 2011, the U.S. had 4.5% of the global population, 17% of consumer demand. China and India had 40% of the population, but only 4.25% of the consumer demand. So if you just do a simple mathematical calculation, if we rebalanced instantly tomorrow, on average, we would have to reduce our consumption by approximately 75%. Imagine having to overnight reduce your consumption by 75%. So this process of rebalancing is a serious one. We have to get more productive. We have to reduce consumption. They have to increase consumption and services, lower productivity relative to the, they don't need to lower productivity, but it'll lower as a percent relative if they grow consumption and servicing. But how that's going to happen, there's tremendous opportunity inside of that, but it means a very different United States and a very different global economy. And how we go about doing this is of the utmost importance. Roach goes into it in great detail. One of the symptoms of this sort of rebalancing, you're seeing tremendous tension between the G7 and the other members of the G20 in throughout the globe, and that's what a lot of the tensions are, is this unbearable gap in terms of participation in the economy, and the BRICS being very uncomfortable with continuing to support the dollar system. The Snowden revelations have contributed to that. They've underscored the importance for the BRICS of having independent clearing, settlement, and communication systems. Trying to build those kinds of systems and have them work with dependability and trust, that's a huge, huge job. But we see a tiny first step in the BRICS Development Bank that happened very recently here, and I doubt that that would ever have happened if it hadn't been for the Snowden revelations. So again, it's very interesting to think who facilitated and helped that happen. This is what the G7 has been trying to stop, as they bring everybody, including the outliers, into the model. They stopped Libya's African Development Bank. So it'll be interesting to see what happens that will be done to kind of try and sabotage. At the same time, the big, exciting, and unbelievably wonderful secret is there's lots of equity and lots of transactions and lots of trade that wants to happen, if it can happen in a much more decentralized and robust way. So we need a lot of these trustworthy systems. And I think just like the BRICS have broken away and started this development bank, you're going to see more and more people doing it, because they can't, you know, they can't sit around and wait for the centralized system to squeeze them into the ground. And so as the centralized system tries to maintain control and gets uglier and uglier, we're going to see more of these popping up all over the place, like the Caddyshack gopher. Okay, area number four, the energy model evolves. We continue to see a very dynamic story with renewable energy improving. Solar improving, the battery technology improving. We are, I think, within 2 years of some unbelievable breakthroughs. We'll just have to see. Meantime, oil and gas continues to be an extremely important control mechanism for the dollar system. Dollar is essentially on an oil and gas standard. So that's one of the reasons you're seeing more hardball from the oil and gas. And it wouldn't surprise me if one of the reasons you see the breakaway is coming out of, a lot of them coming out of oil and gas. They knew that wasn't going to last forever. It's also all the guys doing the drilling are the guys in a position to make money doing the underground bases. As I said, watch the oil and gas story with Putin. Russia is benefits by the oil card and keeping the oil and gas price high, so it wouldn't surprise me if they're that's part of where Putin is getting some of his support from. Area number five, smartphones and digital currencies and payment mechanisms are growing importance. I talked a lot about this on the annual wrap-up, and I talked a lot about it in the first quarter, but one of the things I learned talking to subscribers in my last trip to California is it really takes sitting down and thinking about this to understand the importance of what this is going to mean. We're talking literally about giving every person on the planet a tool that allows them to connect with everybody else. And this is absolutely unprecedented. It has incredible implications for communication, for culture, for innovation, for the economy. You're talking about something that can reorganize both the communication systems, the global consumer markets, production, distribution, everything. And I don't think there's anyone on the planet who quite really understands what it means. And given the centralization and control of the digital systems, it also means a very invasive, even as some people would describe, slavery system. So there's all sorts of pros and cons, but I really want you to imagine what it means that billions of people who have never had running water or toilets and sewers are now getting smartphones. So we're talking about quite a revolution for billions of people all around the globe. Google, Facebook, Amazon are going to be unbelievably important to what I think is the end game on the dollar system, and that is digital currencies and payment mechanisms. I've talked a lot about it before. I do think that it is going to be possible at some point to literally tender for the global citizenry through the currency the way Chancellor Kohl did for the East German population in 89. But that's going to depend on private satellite systems. You know, part of the key to this is the suborbital platform, and it's going to work through social media and the online system. So if energy was the control point for the dollar or the standard for the dollar, one question to ask is whether space telecommunications and social media will be the equivalent for the 21st century digital currency. But that's an area to watch closely, because the battle for control of the digital wallet and the digital wallet citizen by citizen globally has just begun, and it's going to be very, very important. The drumbeats of war, area number six. I said at the beginning of the year in the wrap-up, and I've said on many interviews, was that our risk, if the slow burn frayed and began to fall apart, that the risk was not a global financial collapse, the risk was war. And I think the chances of war are, in fact, rising. Economic warfare is more than running the risk of doing enormous damage to the economy. And we see what I describe as asymmetrical war rising. So that's asymmetrical war is organized crime, among other things, covert operations. And I think the risk of war is right now greater than what I had expected at the time I did the annual report. I think that risk is rising. And I want to stress, I've had a lot of people send me various videos or emails that our risk is likely to be the U.S. government. I don't think so. Someone I have great respect for sent me an email and said, oh, there's an incredible shift of personnel and resources by the Department of Defense to Tennessee and West Virginia and Kentucky. Aren't you worried that they're worried about something going on where you are and controlling the population? I said, no, I think if that's true, and I don't know that it is, but if they're moving people and materials in, it's because they're moving in for, they're looking for the same thing I'm looking for, which is a safe home base. So, my guess, if that is happening, they're, having to be prepared for an increased chance of nuclear war when you have this much squabbling with people like Russia and tensions with Israel. You're talking about nuclear powers, and nuclear powers that, if cornered, could use nuclear weapons. So I think there is a real concern that this could happen. So I don't think our risk is that the government's going to be targeting us. I think the risk is that the gods are warring and they're too busy fighting their wars to be concerned about what it means to us, or they're using tactics that are going to resort to a greater lawlessness or violence that could impact us. But I do think the chances of war are rising, and it's just something we have to keep an eye on. That doesn't mean, you know, that I think the chances are large. So, but I'm just saying, watch the slow burn. If it starts to fray, then the violence is going to increase. Area number 7, expect the shift to quality in the financial markets. Who can enforce what has inelastic demand from an economic standpoint? What is essential? What is durable? And dividends matter. Who can pay a dividend on an ongoing basis? Let's just walk through the different areas. Precious metals. The big question, of course, all year long has been when and if precious metals will reassert their primary trend. I've said for a long time now, I think there's an 80% or better chance that they will reassert their primary trend up, but it's not a guarantee, and I've been waiting. The precious metals, gold was up about 9% in the first half of the year, and it has packed off a little bit since then. The chart continues to look, to me, very, very weak. And August and early September are traditionally the worst time of the year in terms of seasonality for gold and silver. And so I think we need to just watch and wait. The danger, of course, is why you want to make sure you have a core position. And that is that we could see gold at the heart of what I call a reset of global values. That's where you literally go to bed and gold's $1,290 and you wake up the next day and it's been reset to $2,500. And that's how they use it to sort of rebalance accounts in the wholesale system. You see a lot of the gold bugs saying, oh, a reset is likely. I would be surprised if a reset happened this year, but we've seen enough fraying of the slow burn such that anything could happen, and certainly a reset could happen. 2015, 2016 doesn't mean it will. It really comes down to what the arrangements are. If Google gets the wallet out there, we could skip a reset, and the reset could be on a wholesale basis, and retail never see it. Okay, that's it for precious metals. And again, Franklin will be on in the second week of August, and we'll have a very in-depth conversation about what's going on in precious metals. Fixed income is a very important area to watch, and that's because quality matters. And we're starting to see the credit problems that we've known were there come up. And as the Fed tapers, the liquidity in the financial institutions will not be there to deal with it or cover it up, or, as I said, the Fed have a shredding party buying in weak paper and shredding it, is my theory of what's been part of what's been going on. So let's just go through the different areas. Bank deposits. I continue to believe that the safest bank deposit is a very good insured credit union or bank. The bank, FDIC insured, the credit unions have a different system. But you want a very high quality institution that you think could make it without the FDIC insurance, but you want to stick within the FDIC insurance system if you're domestic. I like to have money in other jurisdictions, but remember, you need very, very sound jurisdictions. I keep getting questions about whether I think Switzerland is safe. And the answer is yes, I think Switzerland's one of the safest jurisdictions, but I don't underestimate the fact that European liquidity issues is going to impact them as well. The reality is they've played ball with the Department of Justice at great expense to themselves, but in a liquidity crunch, that is probably going to help them enormously. Money markets, as I said, the SEC is promulgating new rules. It's very important for your money markets to stay in either government credits or with a custodian that's excellent, or both. Actually, I would say both. But be very careful about money markets because the weak ones could really get shaken out. What the SEC will probably do, and we'll have to see, but if they allow the net asset value to be reported at less than a dollar, the weaker ones could really get shaken out. Sovereign debt, the weaker credits are going to have trouble. And you've got a lot of countries around the world who can't afford to pay their debt. So let's see what's going to happen. They can print, but that has other ramifications. Municipal debt, we've known for a long time that there are weaker credits who are working out of reserves and can't continue to carry their debt service are going to get in trouble. So expect that to start to catch up with us in the municipal market. By the fourth quarter in 2015, it will probably accelerate in 2015. Unless the Fed step in and really help, again, the Feds can print money, the municipalities can't. That's going to be their challenge. So expect to see more trouble in the municipal debt market. Equities, there was a very interesting June publication by a think tank, OMFIF, that I have talked about a fair amount on the Salieri Report. Just let me read you what I wrote in one newsletter this last month. A new round of questions was inspired by the June publication of think tank OMFIF of a survey of global central banks, sovereign wealth funds, and government pension funds, which reports that government institutions, public institutions, now own $29.1 trillion of the estimated $130 trillion in cross-border assets. This includes $13 trillion held by 157 central banks, reported before the recent increases from quantitative easing, $9.5 trillion held by 156 public pension funds, and $6.5 trillion by 87 sovereign wealth funds. OMFIF reported a broad-based shift of central bank assets into the equity markets. China's central bank, with $3.9 trillion of assets, has now become the world's largest public investor in equities. The Swiss National Bank reports holding 15% of its foreign exchange assets in shares. Now, what are we facing in the equity markets? When you have a highly centralized system that is very leveraged, what can happen in the equity markets is a very wide variation. You can literally see the market shift to PEs of 30 or PEs of 10. There is huge variability because you don't have the market regrounding in the fundamentals day by day by day. That's what market economics does. But when you have enormous intervention in a centralized system, you get a situation where you can have unbelievable variability. In 2010, McKinsey wrote a report saying as the economy shifts to growth in the emerging markets, it's going to be trouble for the equity markets because the emerging market populations don't invest in equities. Well, surprise, surprise. If you have the central bank sovereign wealth funds and public pension fund systems, and remember, China and the emerging markets are now talking about providing more of a public pension social safety net. If those institutions start to swing enormous money as they grow into the equity markets, then you're talking about literally a shift of the entire planet out of the debt model into the equity model. It would certainly be wonderful if it could happen on a nice basis. I continue to beat this drum because debt is a financial system. I always say debt equals war and equity equals peace. One of the things that is preventing war so far in the Ukraine-Russian situation is you have a whole series of American and German and other corporations who are doing business with Russia, and they don't want their profits interfered with and their operations interrupted. So greed is holding us together in one sense of the word. But if we have equity invested with each other, then we want each other to succeed. We change the incentive system. The reality is the entire planet has far more debt than they can afford and they can support with a proper cash flow. And I've said it before, we literally need a debt for equity swap. The question is how to get there. And one way to get there is we all start shifting the money we're shifting out of the bond market into the equity markets. And that may be in part what, well, I certainly think it is what is happening if you look at the reports of institutional investment. That's why in 2008 and 2009, when the slow burn more than frayed, everyone went to fixed income. The challenge is fixed income is not necessarily the safest place to go now. And that's one of the reasons I suspect that you're seeing dividends. Companies, strong companies paying good dividends are doing remarkably well in this market. And I think it's because dividends matter. If you haven't listened to the equity report we did with Chuck Gibson last year on why dividends matter, it's very prescient as to exactly how the markets performed over the second quarter. So I think even with the Fed tapering and the possibility of interest rates rising, there are some reasons why we may see the U.S. markets continue strong. If you look at all the technical analysis, the bull market in the U.S. continues. We also see the emerging markets perking up. The emerging markets had diverged very strongly through the end of last year, and they started to perk up, but it was early. And of course, the concern was if the U.S. market corrects, particularly because it's summer, seasonality patterns and the history would argue for some kind of at least a 10 or 20% correction. The fear was that they would correct more, but they continue to perk up and have been moving ahead. Europe relatively flat. And of course, given what's happening in the Ukraine and the various tensions, Europe is having a struggle. Interestingly enough, one of the best performers over the last year has been the frontier markets, which are those countries that are not in the G20, but are growing. It's sort of the Outer Mongolia group and a very small illiquid market, but growing and lots of opportunity there. The big story in the third quarter, I think, will be the Alibaba IPO. One of the things that has happened, remember, the China literally just started its equity markets in the 90s. The equity markets are a relatively new thing around the world, and they're still not deep and rich as they continue to grow globally. I think it will help us make this shift out of debt and into equity. The Alibaba IPO happens hopefully in August, and I think it will be a real ringing of the bell to indicate that the Chinese companies are growing and are many and are now ready to really compete as equals in the global market. And that's going to be a very big shift because their whole management and corporate infrastructure is very weak. It's one of the reasons that their accounting is not considered trustworthy. Their audits are not considered trustworthy. Their corporate infrastructure and leadership isn't considered trustworthy. To a certain extent, that's a reflection of youth. So let's see if the corporate infrastructure grows up. And if it does, it's going to make them an incredible juggernaut in the corporate world and in the markets. But to me, the Alibaba IPO is sort of the ringing of the bell that new phase is upon us. So the question, of course, is which way do the equity markets go? Does the money trying to get out of the debt bubble and the derivative bubble look to go into equities or not? So could we get a crash up? No way to tell. It could go either way. And as I said, the nervousness with the central nature of the system is very wide variability is possible. Okay, so let's turn to you and look at what you need to do. It is extremely important to understand that in the environment we're going into, that it is, you know, as it is important to look in the investment world for quality, the same thing is important to look for in your life. You need quality. If you look, we have our summer picnic special up on the blog. We have a cap and a picnic apron. So for your barbecuing with the Soleri logo on it, the Soleri logo is a solar armillary, and an armillary is a tool of alignment is the way I think about it. It was until the Europeans brought the telescope out in the 17th century, the armillary sphere was an instrument used by astronomers in determining celestial positions. It's very important to keep moving towards the people and activities that align with your purpose and values and break away from those who don't. If you have anyone in your life who wastes your time and energy, get them out of your life if you possibly can. We spent a lot of time at our various lunches and activities talking about that. We got a question from one of the subscribers that I wanted to address. The television shows that are on TV today are dramatically different than they were 40 to 50 years ago. They were kinder and gentler back then, and today there's much more violence, ego, and putting down of other people. In your opinion, has this shift been orchestrated by the powers that be in attempting to shift our thoughts, feelings, behavior, and actions in the directions that suits them? It's a combination of things. A strong recommendation we've had several times on the Let's Go to the Movies, Adam Curtis's work, the lead documentary being Century of Self. He does a great job of describing this degradation of entertainment, and you really want to watch that. Also, please, if you haven't listened to Adam Trombley's interview on entrainment, please do. I do think very much that TV is doing what they can to teach people to behave in ways that completely negate their personal power. So as you learn the behavior taught to you by TV, your power goes down. And part of it is we learn how to denigrate each other and engage in sort of all sorts of drama queen behavior that doesn't really get us to a place where men and women make each other more powerful, and families help each other become more powerful. If you have heard me beat the drum about our interview with Jay Hughes called On Family Wealth, it's about how families get together and make each other more powerful. And the reality is, if you look at what TV teaches, it teaches men and women to tear each other down. It teaches young people and old people to tear each other down. It teaches families to tear each other down. So, that is not a way to build personal power whatsoever. I want to talk about time management too, because I have seen just in the Soleri team the amount of stress placed on individuals in their personal lives as a result of family getting sick, of a variety of financial troubles in families or in community. On and on and on. We all need to build reserves into our time to just manage things that could go wrong, because the risk in the environment legally, financially, and physically is going up. So just make sure not to overcommit and build reserves into your time and build in time to take care of you. It is so important to stay healthy into this environment. So keep investing in health. Learn to say, I don't know. I'm watching enormous waste of time in people engaging in wasteful and angry conjecture. It's reaching epidemic proportions on the internet. We don't know a lot of what was going on. That was what was so wonderful about being in San Mateo with Richard Dolan and Dr. Farrell was just great brains of people who know a great deal and can teach a great deal, but saying, we just don't know. And we can't get to the point where we know if we don't start with what we don't know. So just really pay attention to quality of life and your quality of life and making sure the people around you and the place where you are, what you do in this world to earn a living or generate equity value is something that is really quality. So just get ridiculously tough about quality. Our hero for the quarter, I couldn't decide. We have a tie. And believe it or not, they're both from Europe, public officials who've shown, in my opinion, who've engaged in acts of enormous and inspiring courage. The first was our hero on April 10th, And his name is Domenico Schilapati. I probably mispronounced that. He's an Italian senator who has petitioned to abolish state secret about chemtrails. I can't tell you how courageous you need to be to do that, particularly given what's going on in Italy right now. The second is Saskia Striveling, who we discussed on June 12th, president of the Dutch National Court of Auditors, who pointed out that there were billions missing from the NATO accounts. And, you know, I don't want to remind everyone that, of course, there were, I believe the number of the count is now 198 Dutch citizens on the plane that went down, but almost makes you wonder if there's a connection, as frightening as that may sound, but there it is. Our movie that I wanted to discuss today is Salamander, which is a Belgian series, TV series, that was purchased by the BBC. It's a cross, as one reviewer said, between The House of Cards and Wallander. So if you like The House of Cards and Wallander, you might like Salamander. It's the story of a Belgian police inspector who's fighting corruption. It goes on for 12 episodes. There's talk of a new version of it being done in filmed in the, I don't know if it's in the UK or the US, but English speaking version, as it stops at the 12 episodes, and it's deeply fun to watch. One of the reasons I wanted to recommend it, in addition to it being great entertainment if you like that kind of police inspector genre, is it shows you the power of control files and the extent to which control files are used in a variety of ways. And I think it's very helpful to understand it as a, to get an emotional understanding of how important it is. And I have struggled mightily with various subscribers or clients to help them understand the power and importance of these kinds of systems to control a political system anyway. But it's very useful in helping you understand that. Okay, let me describe some of the special things that are coming up in the next quarter on the Salieri Report. We have been working now for over a year on new blog and subscription software. We sat down and made a list of everything our subscribers wanted in terms of improvements to the blog, improvements to the subscription software. We thought we were going to launch it in the first half, but no, we're going to launch it now by Labor Day, and we're very excited. So you'll be hearing from us more about that. You'll certainly see the blog when it comes up. We'll give you a heads up before it does. And we think that subscriber software is going to make your lives much easier. It's going to be a much more professional experience. The Salieri team has worked mighty hard to do this, and we're very excited and hope it satisfies you as much as we expect it to. We hope to do a lunch in Albuquerque in late September as I drive back to the San Francisco Bay Area. And then we are exploring the possibility of a small weekend retreat in the San Francisco Bay Area in October or early November when I return. A lot of subscribers and friends and some of the speakers want to keep the conversation going that started in Marin and San Mateo, particularly about cosmology and values. There was a lot of talk of we need to start a new culture. If we're going to break away, how do we break away in a way that gives each other energy? And of course, it starts talking about who are we, why are we here, what do we want to do, and how do we relate to each other in a way which is meaningful and supportive over time. If you're interested in doing something like that, please keep us posted. These will be subscribers will be given a notice, but we will the first one will be small. If it's successful, we'll do more, but it will be by invitation only. It won't be open to the public. So those invitations will only be offered to probably the Salieri subscribers and members of Dr. Joseph Farrell's website or any of the other people who participate. Finally, I just want to say how much I appreciate your support of me and the entire Salieri Report team. Having the opportunity to serve you and to do the Salieri Report is one of the finest things that has happened in my life. I'm very positive about the future and my future, and it's because I've met all of you and I know what can happen when a group of positive people come together and do what they can in a way that's energizing for them to really shift things. And I think there is a lot of opportunity as things kind of come apart for things to gather and come together. And I can feel that happening. So please keep the flow of ideas, suggestions, and feedback coming. I think you're terrific. And I'm so delighted that we are in cahoots. In closing, next week, we have an equity overview with Chuck Gibson. Then the following week, Dr. Joseph Farrell on his new book, Hermetica, if you want to revisit some of those important issues of cosmology and values and how we got to where we are. It's a real good one. Book review up last week. You can check it out on the blog. And then August 14th, Precious Metals with Franklin Sanders. As always, we have an enormous amount to talk about. We will be in the month. August and early September is the seasonal lows for precious metals, but typically, if they're going to be strong, they're going to be strong in the fall. And given the geopolitics globally, there's a lot of things happening that could make precious metals strong. And if their prices aren't strong, having coins will certainly be useful. So war is a time when it's nice to have that stash of Gougarant. So we'll have a lot to talk about. So ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the second quarter wrap-up. Until next week, July 31st with Chuck Gibson. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.